I'm Yada, and this is Shattering Myths. Each day we expose and condemn the beguiling and the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, we'll open your eyes and change your mind towards each of these things. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you actually understand what is really occurring behind the headlines. We will reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect your family, all while predicting how these events will shape America and the world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, on His terms, by way of His one and only covenant, and through His always dependable Torah, which means teaching, not law, so that God's guidance will help you replace religion with reason. Our phone number, if you want to engage in this discussion, question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. This morning I had the opportunity to do another installment, an hour chat on KGAP, something I've done now once a month for almost 11 years. And during that discussion, we began with a quick review of the fiscal cliff. And even though we in this program during the first hour are going to turn to government spending and taxation and deficits, I thought I would give you this summary that I shared just an hour ago. Reagan was president 24 years ago. He cut taxes from 70% on the highest wage earners down to 28%. So if he cut taxes by almost two-thirds, from 70% to 28%, by more than half, you would expect during this 24 years that revenues would have decreased rather than risen. But in fact, in cutting the tax rates on the highest wage earners from 70% to 28%, revenues have actually risen from $600 billion when Reagan took office to $2.5 trillion last year. That's an increase of over four times. The problem with our deficit isn't, therefore, revenue. It's spending. Spending during that same 24 years rose from $680 billion when Ronald Reagan took office to $3.8 trillion this year. Spending has increased six times in a score in 4 years. Now, during that time, our deficit, which was under $1 trillion when Reagan took office, has grown to over $16 trillion. We've given birth to the deficit, and it has spiraled out of control. Rather than being concerned about a fiscal cliff, we ought to be concerned about the mountain that we jumped off of. We have simply jumped off our planet and are in a downward spiral, a death spiral, which is too far gone to be arrested. Think of this, too. Today in Europe, a resolution was passed by the EU to continue to bail out Greece. The goal of that is to reduce Greece's overall deficit as a percentage of GDP, to reduce Greece's deficit, rather than to slow its growth, which is all that anyone is talking about in America, is to slow its growth, to reduce Greece's deficit, which is now about 160% of GDP, down to 124% of GDP by 2020. That's the goal. The U.S., the deficit will be at 125% of GDP in 4 years. And I can tell you that we're going to go from over $16 trillion to over $20 trillion in the next 4 years, because all you have to do is look at Medicare and Social Security. And when you look at the actuarial tables associated with those two Ponzi schemes, you recognize that we're going to continue to add $1 trillion to the deficit each of the next 4 years. And therefore, by 2016, The U.S. debt will be at 125% of GDP, and by 2020, it'll be 150% of GDP. We will be far worse than Greece, which means that America will lose its sovereignty, as Greece has already done. This past election, America was given the lesser of two evils. For the first time in probably a century, we had an extraordinarily qualified candidate, at least as it relates to the economy, who had built businesses, who knew what it took to create jobs and to build businesses, versus a guy who had never served fries at McDonald's, who had never worked a day in his life in private industry. Never has the choice been so clear, and yet America chose the greater of the two evils. And so our tombstone has already been chiseled. With that introduction, I would like to change pace here and switch to the what is considered to be the great savior of humankind, science. And the reason I think this is kind of interesting is that even today, when we know for certain that global warming is a myth, that it is not fact, and we have absolute proof that over the last 16 years, temperatures have not risen even one-tenth of a degree, and that over a 40-year period, they actually dropped in gradient. Even recognizing this, the networks are blaring out all sorts of programs based upon Katrina and Sandy, suggesting that sea levels are rising and that we're going to lose our coastlines, and the mainstream media is presenting climate change derived from global warming, even though we know for fact that global warming is fiction. And it's all presented as a direct result of carbon emissions, which the elite want to control so they can control people's lives, so they can control economics, so they control people's movements and their productivity. So in this light that science wants to be savior, I'd like you to consider this story. Researchers at the Large Hadron Collider have detected one of the rarest particle decays in nature. The finding, however, deals a blow, in fact a death blow, to the theory of physics known as supersymmetry. Now, why should you care about that? Well, supersymmetry, or SUSY, as it is called, has gained great popularity as a way to explain some of the enormous inconsistencies in the traditional theory of subatomic particles known as the Standard Model. You see, the Standard Model is off by 94%. Between the presence of dark matter and the presence and existence of dark energy, all of our calculations to explain the nature and workings of the universe are errant by 96%. Supersymmetry is a theory that tries to bridge that gap, to try to make the math work. Now, supersymmetry theorizes the existence of more massive versions of particles than have already been detected. Now, that's counterintuitive. That means that we have detected particles that are much smaller than the ones we can't find. If found, they say, they would help us understand the phenomenon known as dark matter, which is the smaller of the two problems. Dark energy is a much larger problem to science than is dark matter. In dark matter, that's the tendency of things to attract at a rate way beyond that which can be observed. That's why galaxies are spinning much faster than they should, using our modern understanding. And in dark energy, it explains why the universe is not only expanding rather than contracting, but expanding at an accelerating rate. In fact, expanding faster than the universal constant, which is the speed of light. So galaxies, this article says, appear to rotate faster at their edges than the matter we can account for would suggest. And one of the candidates for this missing dark matter is supersymmetry particles. However, the research at the Large Hadron Collider detector have dealt a serious blow to the hopes of finding them. If supersymmetry, however, is not an explanation, then, for dark matter, then theorists will have to find alternative theories to explain those inconsistencies in the standard model. We're not talking about inconsistencies that are wrong by 10% or 20% or 30%. They're between 4 and 6% right. They're between 94 and 96% wrong. That's how big these inconsistencies are. The article says, so far, researchers who are racing to find the evidence of so-called new physics, in quote, have run into a series of dead ends. If, this is a quote, if new physics exists, then it is hiding very well behind the standard model, end quote, commented Cambridge physicist Dr. Mark Oliver Bettler, a member of the analysis team. Let me see if I can translate this into the common vernacular. We don't have a clue. We can't explain how the universe came into being. We can't explain how it works. We can't even explain from what it is actually comprised. We don't know its past. We don't know its future. We don't even understand its present. Worse, we don't even know where to look for answers. If your trust is in man and having evolved his sciences to the point that he would never allow a Great Depression to occur, that he would now never allow total anarchy to reign, that he will be able to rein in the forces of nature which are destroying our cities, that he will control the earthquakes that are so destructive, that he will prevent the asteroids from colliding with the Earth as are predicted, your trust is in the wrong place. They haven't got a clue. Oh, they know so many things. But the problem with them, as is the problem with all scholars, is that understanding is lacking. It's one thing to know through observation. It is an entirely different thing to understand. And that is where so many religious and political and scientific personalities fail. They know, but they do not understand. And therefore, you should not trust them. You should not rely upon them. You should turn to the one who gives you all of the answers you need so that you can understand. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. You can join our conversation at 877-300-7645. This next story is just mind-blowing. You know, in Syria, what we have is a proxy war. We have the Sunni kingdoms like Saudi Arabia and Qatar joining together to fight the expansion of Shia Islam as sponsored by Iran. And this battle is a direct result of the United States invading Iraq, which was controlled by a Sunni dictator, and giving Iraq to the Sunnis, who are the mullahs in Tehran. And so the United States, by invading Iraq, giving it to Iran, created the field under which this war is taking place. And so now through proxies, you have Iran and Shia Islam battling Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and other Islamic kingdoms that are Sunnis. And one group is using Iranian and Russian and Chinese weapons, and the other is using American and European weapons. And so you not only have a proxy war between Sunni and Shia Islam, but you also have a proxy war between China and Russia on one side and the United States and Europe on the other. The United States and Europe are on one side because we acquiesce the demands of the OPECers in Saudi Arabia. Iran and Russia have a much more entangled relationship with the OPECers in Iran because of the Caspian Sea oil and gas reserves. So you're actually seeing the playing field develop here for what will be somewhat similar to World War III and World War IV going forward. Now, All that being the case, this was the news announced yesterday, where you have the Shia government and its allies now entangled in a civil war against Sunni Mujahideen. On all of the Sunni who are fighting against Assad's Shiite regime are fundamentalist Islamic jihadists. So, Syria's newly named opposition leader, a soft-spoken cleric, backed by Washington and the Gulf Arab states, launched his quest on Monday for international recognition as a government in waiting to topple President Bashar al-Assad. So, here it is. You've got an imam from a mosque in Damascus, who has been elevated to the general over the Mujahideen. So he is the guy that's going to coordinate and unify the jihadists who are engaged in a civil war against the Shia of the Bashar government. And so America and the fiefdoms around Syria picked an imam to serve as the general overseeing the jihadists. Now, you'd think that if you did that, that you'd be able to make the connection between Islam and jihad and terrorism, wouldn't you? But of course not. We're going to arm and aid this imam as he sponsors the civil war against Assad, and we will have equipped our next enemy. It's something we do with reckless abandon in the United States. This article continues. In a sign of the danger that a civil war could spread across Syria's borders, which is why I guess we have to intervene, Israeli forces said that they fired direct hits on Syrian artillery in response to a mortar strike into the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. The Golan Heights is not occupied. It was achieved, given, taken by Israel because in the Yom Kippurim War, the Syrians started a war against Israel, and even though they had superior firepower and they began the war on the Golan Heights at 100-1 superior forces in terms of the quality of their technology on the Golan Heights with their tanks and in manpower, they lost. And when you attack a country and a place like the Golan Heights, which was lobbing artillery shells down in the Galilee area, and you lose that war, you lose that ground. So the Golan Heights is not occupied. It's part of Israel now. And Israel took care of the mortar strikes. It retaliated. Israel knows how to deal with Islamic terrorists. Western and Arab enemies of Assad hope that the creation of a new Syrian national coalition for opposition and revolutionary forces, that means Islamic terrorists, that means Islamic Mujahideen, can finally unify a fractured and ineffective opposition. So who did they hire to unify the Mujahideen, the jihadists? An imam. Of all people. Boy, are we stupid. More on this story when we return to Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. Our number is 877-300-7645. The man's name is Moaz al-Khatib. He was an imam at a Damascus mosque. So he's off to Cairo today to seek the Arab League blessing for a new assembly, the day after he was unanimously elected to lead it. He made a concerted effort to address the sectarian and ethnic acrimony underlying 20 months of civil war that has killed 38,000 people. Now, understand, this began as a peaceful protest, unarmed. And it became a civil war that has led to the deaths of 38,000 people for a singular reason. And that is because the kingdoms around Syria, the Sunni kingdoms, like Saudi Arabia, decided that they could fight a proxy war in Syria just as the United States fought a proxy war against Russia in Vietnam, and that they could supply weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen, the fundamentalist Muslims, and that that would engage Syria in a civil war that they hoped would unseat the Shiite control of that country. As a result of that decision, 38,000 people are dead. But does it mean anything to King Abdullah? Of course not. And then this is his opening statement. We demand freedom for every Sunni, Alawi. I'll read these names and then I'll tell you who they represent. Alawi, Islamia, Christian, Druze, Assyrian, and others. And writes for all parts of the harmonious Syrian people. He said, calling on Syrian soldiers to desert and all sects to unite. Yahweh said that, speaking of Ishmael's descendants, today's Muslims, that not only will they be wild asses of men, but that their hands will be raised against their brother and their brother's hands will be raised against them, and that they will live in hostility with the whole world. They will never unite. God never is wrong. So he speaks first for the Sunni. That's the first in his list because he is a Sunni. He is representing Sunnis, and only Sunnis will listen to him. He mentioned the Alawi. That was the second. Well, the Alawi are a subset of the Twelver sect of Shia Islam. That is the largest sect of Shia Islam. Sunnis and Shias do not unite. And so the Alawi and the Sunni are the two groups that are most aggressive in fighting one another. The Ismaili is the second sect and the second largest sect of Shia Islam. It's named indirectly after Ishmael. And so you have Sunni against Shia Islam in its largest sect, and Shia Islam named after Ishmael in its second largest sect. He then named Christians. Now, the assumption is that he meant Roman Catholic because he will name Assyrians in due time. So let's just assume that by Christian he meant Roman Catholics. There is a large Roman Catholic group in Assyria, and they are united. They're united in support of Assad. They know that if this imam and his mujahideen prevail, they're as good as dead. The same thing happened in Iraq. When America invaded Iraq, the Christians were annihilated. And so they know that they have to side with Assad. No matter how bad Assad is, the side that America is backing is worse. He then lists the Druze. Now, the Druze are a blend of Ishmael's Shia Islam and Gnosticism. So let's just call the Druze Shia Islam light. Now, recognizing the nature of what happens to Druze with their light version of Shia Islam in the midst of a Sunni government, they also know that if the Sunni Mujahideens prevail, they're as good as dead. Now, it is interesting with the Druze is that the Druze actually comprise the decisive aspect of the Assyrian military. As a matter of fact, if you go back a number of years, the Druze were so prolific in the military that the Alawite leaders knew that if the Druze were ever to turn on them, they could overturn the country and its dictator in a matter of hours, because the Druze comprise the lion's share of Assad's military. And it's a blend of Ishmael's Shia Islam with Gnosticism. He then listed the Assyrians last. Now, Assyrian is not a sect. It is not a sect that can be united. It's a race. So if he meant Christians to be Roman Catholics, where the Pope has flown into Damascus because he is in wholehearted support of Assad, The Assyrians would be the Assyrian Church and the Syriac Orthodox Church. Again, Christian groups who are allied with Assad because they know as bad as he is, they're dead if this revolution that is being backed by America prevails. Now, his assembly was recognized by the six Muslim-ruled kingdoms of the Gulf Cooperation Council as the legitimate representative of the Syrian people. And Washington said that it would back it as it charts a course toward the end of Assad's bloody rule and the start of the peaceful, just, democratic future. Now, folks, come on. Nothing says democracy better than the endorsement of six Sunni Muslim-ruled kingdoms. You are in this position because you were endorsed by six Sunni Muslim-ruled kingdoms, and you are going to be the advocate for democracy and freedom? Is it me, or is there anybody in the United States government that has any ability to think?
Well, you got to remember, Craig, those six people that were in charge there took a vote and they nominated him.
Oh, so that's kind of like the Holy Roman Empire in Europe, which was a league of not Sunni Islam and kings, but of Roman Catholicism and kings, that if they took a vote and said, this is our guy, that would be the person that would be most likely to start a revolution that would upend dictators like kings and replace it with freedom and democracy.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. I'm glad my producer Scott is as smart as those who are leading America. Actually, Scott knows the truth. He's making fun of it because it is so unbelievably stupid that America would endorse someone and said that they are the start of what is a peaceful, just, and democratic future for Syria, when in fact they are a religious cleric nominated by six Sunni Muslim ruled kingdoms, which are dictatorships. It is just astonishing what we will do for allies. Oh, let's set this man right alongside Luther and Jefferson.
Quick side note.
Yes,
it's also pretty astonishing, like what we overlook in order, like, and then like cover up with, like, oh, it's a democracy, you know, like we hear that word and all of a sudden now it's untouchable, like, oh, it's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
Which democracy is just mob rule.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about Islam, which means submission, where the Quran itself says that you have no choice in your government or your religion because Allah has chosen it for you. And we recognize that every vote that has taken place across the Islamic world during this so-called Arab Spring, which is an Islamic reformation, has elected the most fundamentalist Islamicist as leaders, and where you have the most famous of them, Mohammed Morsi, as a longtime member of the Muslim Brotherhood, getting to power by way of democratic vote and immediately establishing himself as a dictator. Well, and we can't put these things together?
Well, that's just it. They start out saying they're a democracy, they get funding from us and things like that, and then nothing changes.
Like, well, of course,
nothing changes for them.
Well, you know, what is China called? It's the People's Republic of China, is it not?
Yes.
And what was the USSR called? The Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, right?
Yes.
Because in all of these countries, even in Saudi Arabia, the people vote. But in a country that is going to be controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria, the only votes that will count will be the Sunni Muslim votes, and they will be told who to vote for. They will go to the mosque, and the imam will tell them, you either vote for this candidate, or Allah is going to burn your britches. And Allah is a fearsome dude. So you want to do anything to avoid having your britches burned by Allah. And so even in the Soviet Union, they voted, but you could only vote if you agreed with the existing government. You were a member of the Communist Party, were the only people allowed to vote, and the very people that were empowered counted the votes. Is that a republic? Is that a democracy? In Iraq, we imposed democracy. We removed a secular dictator, and because we could not count. and we did not recognize that the Shias in Iraq represented two-thirds of the people. Their imams told them who to vote for. They voted for the very imams that were ruling in Tehran, and they elected a Shia government controlled by Tehran. It was obvious they were going to do that. Well, here's the statement, which is just amazing. It says, Western and Arab opponents of Assad want the coalition to attract support from minority sects. I've just gone through who those minority sects are. Every single one of them is on the side of Assad, and they aren't going to change because they know more than anybody in Washington seems to know, which has been alienated from the opposition by the prominence of well-organized Sunnis from the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, the Sunnis that are waging jihad in Syria aren't from the Muslim Brotherhood. What they have in common is that the Muslim Brotherhood represents Salaf or fundamentalist Islam. And they are fundamentalist Muslims. And they are Sunni by their persuasion as it relates to Islam. They aren't from the Muslim Brotherhood. They are like the Muslim Brotherhood. They also hope to rein in Islamist fighters, some of which they believe are linked to Al-Qaeda. There is no link between Al-Qaeda and any of the jihadists fighting in Syria. The common thread is that Al-Qaeda was comprised of fundamentalist Muslims. And the jihadists fighting in Syria are fundamentalist Muslims. What they share in common, all of them, is Islam. Trying to associate them with other organizations is a fool's folly. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back to this story after the commercial break. Yada, we have Larry on the phone, but just before we go to Larry, I'd like to conclude the Al-Khatib quote. Actually, this is a quote about him from a prominent Syrian human rights defender. It says that Al-Khatib is a dynamic, which means he is charismatic. He appeals to people's emotions. Progressive Islamist is like calling somebody a Protestant Catholic. Popular in Damascus and the rest of Syria. He says he's not a trigger-happy jihadist and can play the role of containing the extremist groups. You only control people one of two ways. You either threaten them, and you can control them through threats. Well, this guy is not even in the country, and he's not a trigger-happy jihadist, so he's not going to control them by force of arms. Therefore, he has to influence them, and the only way you can influence people is for them to think you're one of them, which means that he is a jihadist and mindset, which is the only way he would have any chance of influencing them. Now, Larry, just as I had said that I think the fiscal cliff is actually good because the alternative is far worse, you think that having an imam over these jihadists is actually a good idea. Did I quote you correctly? Hello, Larry. Well, I thought we had Larry on the line here. Was hoping. Okay, hi, Larry. Well, I guess we had a technical snafu. It's
we have
not the first
time. Snafu going on there. Yeah, that's what it is.
So you think it's a good idea that we have him, an MO?
Sure, it's a great idea. You know, they can lead him right down to the path of Sharia law.
Perfect.
Jihad actions. You know, they could rape the Christians, start them on fire. Rape each other.
Oh, how come I didn't see this?
Pass laws where they can rape their dead wife. I mean, you know, whatever. Really.
Perfect solution. Sounds so civil. So what you're saying is because Muhammad was a rapist, because Muhammad was a pedophile, because Muhammad was a terrorist, because Muhammad was a mass murderer, by bringing in this imam, we can usher in the era of Sharia law into Syria, where rape and pedophilia and mass murder and terrorism not only reign supreme, they're considered the ultimate good.
Yeah, and it'll be promoted by the government. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you got a mixture of government, you know, state and religion together, you've got pretty much an unstoppable force in the society.
Also, the best way to have a separation between mosque and cleric in Syria is to give the military and the political reins to a religious cleric.
Right. I mean, it makes the ultimate sense, right? I mean, it's like giving a crayon to a 2-year-old, you know, and asking him not to write on the wall. Clearly, it's a bad, bad, bad choice. You know, you don't do that. And certainly, I don't get up every day and contribute my labor, which is stolen from me by the thugs that are in charge here, so that they can transfer funds and weapons and every other thing over to these people. That's not why I go to work in the morning. How about you?
The thing that this was a question that Scott asked, and maybe he'll ask it again, and we can spend considerable time on it in another segment. But why is it that Americans at large don't seem to get it? Why can't they make the connection between the Imam and Sharia law? Between Sharia law.
You said in your book, it's like you said in your book, Americans are very, 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 very uncomfortable with knocking any religion. We live in a politically correct society where you're not supposed to point out things like this. It's wrong.
But if you sterilize
the conversation, what you're doing here is wrong. Don't you know?
If you can't study so that you come to know what is right and wrong with various religions and political schemes and military endeavors, if you don't know the facts, you haven't observed history and current events so as to know the facts, how is it that you can understand anything? And if you don't exercise good judgment.
But that's the beautiful place to be if you're the elite wanting to run the world. They don't want you to exercise judgment now, do they?
They want you
to set back and
to believe.
Well, hey, a bunch of imams are taking control in this country, and we're liking it, and we're going to arm them, and you, Yada, and you, Scott, and you, Larry, are going to help pay for it, whether you like it or not. And while we're at it, we're going to go ahead and bring up the Mexican drug cartels and train them at the course over in Americas, and then they'll launder their drug money through our CFR banks. And you guys should just shut up and take this, because after all,
you're dependent upon us anyway, and you will honor and support its military, who has crafted to make the world far more dangerous than we have found it. Everything that man does in these institutions is wrong, and you ought to know the truth. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that